The Book Was Better.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Book Was Better podcast. I am Kaylee Clark.
I am Taylor Collette.
And today is an exciting day.
It's a very exciting day.
Because we get to talk about something that we're actually passionate about again.
Yes, we all know you did not like Narnia. We know.
Listen, it's just Narnia was not my thing. So this is exciting because while we've talked about Percy Jackson in regards to the very poorly done movies.
Yeah.
We are starting today our series on the Percy Jackson TV series on Disney Plus. So today we are talking about episodes 1 and 2, which covers a little bit into chapter 9 of the book.
Yeah, episode 1 is pretty cut and dry, chapters 1 through 4. Mm-hmm. Episode 2 is chapters 5 through like 8.5.
It's like it's
partway through 9.
So I don't know what page it would be if you're doing like audiobook or
Kindle,
like reading it on like an e-reader. But in the printed copy, it's basically through page 138.
It's hard because, as we'll get into, obviously some things have been shuffled. But that's the rough point.
Yeah, it's first two episodes of the show and the first 138 pages. Seems like a lot of pages, in my opinion, for only 2 episodes to cover.
I mean, when you look at like the amount of book,
yeah,
it's kind of crazy.
So that was my first impression, honestly.
Yeah, I went in a little nervous.
I watched the first couple episodes and then started reading and looked at the chapter titles to kind of give me an idea of where I would need to stop. And I was kind of shocked to see how much was covered in so few episodes.
Yeah.
And I understand that the first 138 pages don't have a whole lot of action or, right? Like what would be the main plot or exciting thing of each episode? I get that there's some of that Hollywood that you have to take into effect
and definitely
or take into account.
When you break down these first couple of episodes and you look at main plot points hit, and then you look at these first eight to nine chapters, main plot points hit, they do hit them all.
Oh yeah. They're pretty spot on, but there are also lots of differences
as we'll get into.
So, one thing I do want to preface a little bit, the TV show is miles and away better than the movies were.
It's so much better.
And I don't want what we're going to start talking about and what we start getting into, I don't want it to come across as like, oh, these people hate the show.
Yes.
That's not the case.
I really
enjoy the show.
The whole point of this podcast is to dissect books turned into media, like movies and TV shows in this case. That is mm-hmm. the entire purpose of our podcast. So it's with love that we're going to tear it apart.
But I also think that we are valid in being disappointed in some things, as well as a lot of fans, I think, are like, our emotions are valid. Your emotions are valid.
I think part of it is
Rick.
It was hyped up a lot.
Yeah, exactly. By Rick himself.
Well, like, and he's a part of it. Rick is a very big part of it. So as much as part of me is like, trust that the author is doing what's best and he knows what he's doing, there's also part of me that's like, this is your work. Like, it's not like you misinterpreted stuff. So yeah.
It's, I understand that I mean, not through experience, obviously. I've never written a screenplay, but I understand that you have to do things differently. I wasn't expecting 100%, but I guess just some of the changes have been a little surprising or disappointing, as we'll get into.
I think
still super entertaining.
I think another part of it is Disney. Sorry. We're both still a little sick.
We're oh my gosh, I'm dying now.
Anyways, I think part of the problem is Disney didn't put enough faith in it, which is very Disney of them. And so they gave them
disappointing of them
super
though.
Limited series, only 8 episodes that aren't even a full hour long. This is so short in like TV show wise
world,
and had such a limited budget as well for like CGI and effects and stuff like that. So I think a lot of things got left on the cutting room floor because they just couldn't afford it. It just, they literally were not given enough budget by Disney, which I am so mad about. And I hope that this show does so well that maybe in future seasons they can do more.
They dedicate the budget they need and the length, right? And give it some more episodes. It's a freaking streaming service or streaming series. You can have as many episodes as you want. You can make the lengths of those episodes as long as you want. Look at The Mandalorian. That's another Disney Plus original.
And those, they're all like an hour.
Are crazy different lengths though. It's not, there's no consistency. Who cares? It's a streaming service. Do whatever you want. There's no TV slot you need to fit into.
No, it's not like, okay, we need this much for ads and whatever. Like, just make the episode how long it needs to be. But don't, again, it's hard. I'm sure they were happy to get any budget that they could to make it. And again, way better than the movies. But I think the movies had a higher budget.
I don't know. I haven't seen the movies since we talked about them. So
from what I remember, the movies
I go back to,
I think at least the first movie had a higher budget.
Probably.
Which is crazy.
But anyway, so I guess that's a little bit of just like a disclaimer. If you're new to the podcast and this is the first episode you're tuning into,
welcome.
Just because we totally dissect and take apart a show doesn't mean that we don't still like it. It's just,
we do it because we love it.
Point. We do it because we care.
Yeah.
We scare because we care.
Yes. Other disclaimer is we're not spoiler free. So if you have not finished the book, because we're recording this and the show hasn't even fully come out, so we can't spoil the end of the show. Haven't seen it. But assuming it follows the book, we're going to be talking about stuff. So if you haven't finished the first book, spoilers ahead. Ye have been warned.
Yeah, this is not a spoiler-free podcast. Never has been, never will be. But, okay, so yeah, let's get into it. Talking about Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. New TV show on Disney Plus covers basically the entirety of this first book. For these first two episodes, they were both directed by the same person, James Bobbin. Both screenplays for both episodes were done by Rick Riordan, along with Jonathan E. Steinberg.
Hmm.
So joint effort between the OG author and probably who's someone who's more of a
someone experienced who knows screenplays. Writer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Music was done, like the themes, and I don't know what this is, what these differentiations are, but the themes, so maybe that's like original composition, was done by Bear McCreary.
Okay.
And then it's also just music by Sparks and Shadows. And I don't know what that means.
Maybe like the opening and closing theme. Is there an opening
maybe thing? That's what it is, because I'm like, I've never seen a distinction like that before.
Yeah, so maybe they just did that closing, like, da-da-da, 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 da-da-da.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
They did that one?
This is the first time we're doing a TV show, so maybe.
And then the other person did the music for the actual episodes.
That's what, yeah. Maybe that, but that's who did that. Good job, both of them. Both, that's all great. Casting was done by Denise Shamian, and Jordana Sapirka. Jordana Sapirka.
Do we want to talk about casting now or later?
I think casting is going to be something we talk about throughout each episode, because new
characters
are going to be introduced. I think as an overall just blanket, pretty good job.
Yeah.
So far from what I've seen.
Yeah. First two episodes.
Definitely have some concerns and complaints, which I'll be mentioning. I have not seen every episode that's been released so far, partially because I want to be able to focus on what's needed for these episodes. I don't.
Yes, it's very hard to try to
bogged down by other things. So
keep this cut. We're used to doing just one movie, one book per episode. So this is also our first time having a book split. I mean, we've done like the seventh Harry Potter, but
the Breaking Dawn.
Cut down. We are trying really hard to keep each episode contained within itself. And then at the very end, we'll do an episode kind of wrapping everything up.
Mm-hmm.
Final thoughts. But we are going to try to keep these thoughts just these two episodes, these 8.5 chapters of the book.
I mean, because honestly, even just doing that, we still have so much we could potentially talk about. So,
oh, yeah.
Trying to rein it in. So, brief summary here. For just these first two episodes, these first couple chapters, we are introduced to Percy Jackson. He is 12, middle school boy, who is at a boarding school with his best friend Grover. And it's a school for troubled kids. You learn that Percy's bounced around schools a lot. He doesn't like bullies, and so he gets in trouble a lot for standing up to this bully named Nancy. And so on a school field trip to a museum in New York City, it's just like, oh, coincidence, because they're looking in like the ancient Greek artifacts area or whatever. He basically gets attacked by one of his teachers, who isn't really a human teacher. She's a coughing fit. She's a kind. I can't talk. Hold on.
The kindly ones are coming for you.
Honestly, they're clawing at my throat. But she's a fury. Sorry, my brain went blank for a minute there. But he doesn't know that. But it kind of throws him into this world of magic, basically the magical world versus the real world.
It's and mythological
because of
world.
The book's first person storytelling, like narrative, he explains, you know, how actually he's never always been all that normal, and he's always had weird experiences or blah blah blah, and he's not a normal kid, right? Poor Percy, not a normal kid, but he loves his mom, and he gets kicked out of school. Goes back home to his mom. They go on their annual trip to Montauk, where he learns that he's not a normal kid, but for good reason, because a minotaur starts chasing them. And Grover pops back up because, surprise, your best friend Grover is actually a satyr and is half goat. And they get chased by the minotaur. And they get to Camp Half-Blood, and his mom gets turned to dust, and he learns about demigods and how Olympus merges and moves with like the Western thoughts and world. And
they only really do that.
They
in the
have
book.
The
Huh?
They don't really talk about that in the show.
Yeah, they don't explain it great in the show, but I understand time restraints. He meets some more important characters like Annabeth Chase and Luke, and he realizes that one of his other teachers at school, Mr. Brunner, isn't actually a teacher in a wheelchair, but he's actually a centaur. And he plays a game of capture the flag, a pretty intense one, that ends with him learning who his father is, and his father is Poseidon. And then they introduce the quest, and that's where it ends.
Yes.
So again, about 130, that was my recap, real crappy recap of 139 pages, basically, yeah, of the book. And that spans across two episodes. I believe the first episode is like 40 minutes, 44 minutes long.
Give or take.
But I think if you take out all the credits, it's like 40 minutes long. And the second episode, I think, is also about 40 minutes long.
I think the first two, yeah, are some of the longer ones, which makes sense. They're covering a lot of material.
Yeah. So that's where we'll stop. That's all we're talking about today. And 3, 2, 1 grievances.
So much to talk about.
And a lot of honorary mentions, most likely.
Yeah.
Did I go first last week?
No.
About Narnia?
I went first last week, right?
You did go first.
I feel like I went first.
So I'll go first today.
Okay, great.
Okay, so I guess let's dive into it.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
We're already like 17 minutes into this podcast. It's fine.
We're going to go back to our Harry Potter episode length.
Yeah, like these are going to be some
an
long
hour and a half
ones.
Long each. Like, sorry. Okay. Again, there's so many things we could pick to talk about, and I will have lots of things to put in my honorable mentions. But number three grievance is I do not like how they had Grover basically betray Percy. I don't think it made sense for his character. I don't think it made sense for their relationship.
And it's literally the opposite of the book in a way, because in the book, Grover tries to take the fall and is like, no, I pushed Nancy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's so not their relationship and not Grover at all. And that it bugs me when I know that Rick helped write it that way. Yeah. Where I'm like, dude, if anybody should know these characters, you should.
They're your characters.
So I was really annoyed at how they did that. That it was, oh, Grover's going to betray and basically lie because Percy didn't push Nancy. It happened. The water grabbed her. It didn't happen the way in the show showed it, where he like water bends like with his hands, like, but still he's not entirely sure in the book or the show what happened. He just knows that he didn't push
it. It is interesting because in the book he just is like thinking about it. It's not like he even went to push her.
Yep.
In the show he's like about to
making
push her
emotion. Yeah,
so
it's
like,
weird.
You were gonna push
of
her anyway.
Of course people are gonna think you did. Your hands were there and at the ready.
like you literally looked like you had just pushed her.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's another thing.
So I didn't like that. That didn't make sense to me. In the book, I like that Grover gets on the bus and you know, is going back to New York with Percy. And if anything, it's Grover being so nervous and like, you know, clearly knowing something Percy doesn't know. He's so bad at lying. He cannot hide anything. Freaks Percy out to the point that Percy ditches Grover.
Yes. Like,
much more in character for that to happen than Grover to do any sort of betrayal or anything like that. I feel like the way it happens in the book is more organic and makes more sense to why Grover then shows up frantic and panicked in Montauk. And Percy's like, whoa, what are you doing here? Listen, I was really sorry I ditched you, but like, what the heck, you know, versus in the TV show where he's like angry at him because, mm-hmm. of course, your best friend like ratted you out for something yeah. that you don't entirely think you did. Like, it just doesn't.
Literally got you expelled from school when you've been trying so hard.
Yeah, like it just didn't sit right with me. And it was like especially annoying because like I was so excited in the beginning about their relationship and their friendship and how it was portrayed. It, yeah. And I thought it was so cute.
Literally when the, like first they're at lunch
and they like swapped sandwich toppings because like Grover isn't going to eat meat. Right. Like he takes yeah. the meat off of his and he takes and like Percy the lettuce and tomatoes the, off yeah. of his or something. It's, like
one of my first notes was that I love Grover and Percy's relationship. Like that beginning, the cute scene where they're chatting in the mm-hmm. lunchroom and stuff. Like, I think they did a great job. And then they just stabbed a knife.
And the scene and the line, too, where he's like, don't you know the best way to handle a bully is to never try and never stand up to a
you
bully.
You never stand
like,
up to them.
Just
I don't think that's
Grover.
True.
Like, yep, Grover. Otherwise, I was very impressed and really did like the relationship dynamic between Percy and Grover. But I felt like the way they chose to do that scene and how Percy left Yancey and like the reintroduction to Grover in Montauk and stuff, it just didn't feel right. It wasn't good. It wasn't a good representation of their relationship to me. And that like tried and true loyalty that Grover always had to Percy was just like ignored for a minute there, like yeah. when it was convenient, and it just didn't, I didn't like it. So
yeah, that is fair. Okay.
That's where I'll stop my three. I could go on forever. So
it's so hard. I'm going to try to keep this short. This was one tiny thing. I mean, not super tiny, but like this was one of those things that bugged me more than I thought it would. And that is Percy's dreams. Mm. I hate how the show did them. I think the book's descriptions are so cool and epic and like
and symbolic in the way
it's super
a dream
symbolic
would be.
And a little bit vague and not this cryptic. Weird dementor looking thing. Like just talking straight
holding
at
a
him.
Lantern.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yes, the dementor.
Like what? This Pirates of the Caribbean like stuff. Anyways, in the book, for those who maybe don't remember, it shows like a horse and an eagle fighting on the beach, symbolizing Zeus and Poseidon. And Percy's trying mm-hmm. to run to stop them, but he can't. And then the ground crumbles and then he hears the voice and then he wakes up. And so it's very like symbolism. And then he like later on has another dream where he sees two men, one in green, one in blue, fighting, and again he can't get to them, and then he hears the voice laughing and it's like that's so much cooler.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's a budget reason again where like they just didn't have the money to do the cool dreams.
I think it falls into one of those Hollywood doesn't give its viewers
enough
credit.
Mm.
Where they felt like they had to be way more just blunt really and straightforward instead of include any sort of symbolism.
Yeah, I guess. I was really bummed, though, because I think that those scenes would have looked dope.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
that was something
that bugged me, too. So,
and been more confusing to Percy in a way where he's not just like, there's this weird man who talks to me in my dreams and he's probably a bad guy. It's like, yeah, look at him. He's, of course, a bad guy.
He looks like a weird ring wraith.
Yes. Compared to like
how many other
weird
franchise like bad guys can we compare him to? Mentors, ring wraiths.
And so I just think if just giving Percy credit, I think if he had those dreams, he'd be like, yeah. This is obviously a bad guy and something's going on. And like, it's really obvious. Whereas in the book, Percy's like, these are kind of weird dreams, but like, maybe it's just, I'm having weird dreams. I don't know if this is real.
That dreams, being a demigod, like dreams, you got to take a little bit more seriously, and they normally mean something. So
yeah, that's my tiny number three that I just was bummed about.
Yeah. I mean, these grievances were hard to kind of narrow down, but my number two is, if I can talk, Percy's, my number two has a couple prongs. It's a little bit multifaceted, but it's mostly revolving around the reveal that Percy is Poseidon's son. They completely omit the Hellhound, which will feed into my number one a little bit too. But
that's gotta be, I have to imagine that's a budget cut reason. They did not have the CGI budget to do a Hellhound. Because otherwise, why would you cut it? A different
monster than the Hellhound then.
But all of them would have required CGI.
Still, I feel like that monsters cannot get through. They can only appear if summoned by somebody in the camp. Like, that's kind of a big deal.
Yes.
Percy has already kind of realized at that point that if he's in the water, he's got more strength. He's good to go. He had a little cut heel. Those injuries from the Hellhound, a little bit more of a big deal. Pretty dang bad.
Yeah.
Annabeth doesn't push him into the water with no explanation.
No.
She goes, seeing the injuries, Percy, get back in the water. And he's like, no, I'm fine. Like, tries to brush it off. And she goes, Percy. And he's so tired that he just listens to her and does what she said. Yeah, I got
no water now.
And then immediately starts to heal and feels better. And then the trident appears. And I mean, that kind of stems from another thing for me. The jury is still out for me on Annabeth, which is why I said I'm not 100% with the casting. And I don't care what she looks like. And I know that that's what everybody wants to go to immediately. If anybody has anything negative to say about her performance, that,
oh,
it's just because she doesn't fit the look that you were expecting. I got over that pretty fast. I didn't care when they made Ariel black, did not care when they made Annabeth black. What I cared about was the chemistry and the personality. Like, if you can play the part, you can play the part. Doesn't matter look like.
Look at Dior, who plays Clarice. She does not look like Clarice at all.
At all.
But she, oh my goodness, that passion when her spear breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And like, even
and
like the
and you can like toilet sense like scene. The fire in like her like eyes she and just, everything. Like, yeah.
Nailing it, honestly.
Yeah, where she's just angry. Like, you can see, like, yep, daughter of Ares. Yep, I see it. Like, yep, yeah. I got it. And again, I have not seen all the episodes yet, which is why I say the jury's still out. I'm hoping it improves. I'm hoping it gets better. tell him to go away.
I know. You're talking to
Brendan. It's like, I'm in the middle of recording. But the vibe I get from Annabeth is not wise. It's not wisdom and intelligence. It's arrogance and I'm better than you and I know more than you. Like, it's like, it really bothered me.
And what's
you don't really see her in episode one, but in episode two, the vibe wasn't there. The vibes were off. The relationship's not there.
What's so funny is if you watch there's like, you know, obviously there's YouTube videos and stuff. They have one where the main three watch the first couple episodes and like live react to them. Mm-hmm. And in the bathroom scene, when you first really meet Annabeth and she's talking, even Leah is like, mm-hmm. Why do I look so serious? Like, that was my first scene I was filming. And you can see, like, I'm just taking it way too seriously. I'm way too serious. And even she's, like, critiquing her acting in the beginning
You see all sorts of behind-the-scenes stuff of the three of them. And they're great.
Great dynamic.
I can totally see the chemistry there. I can totally see it. For whatever reason, it's not coming through in the actual scenes that they're filming.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm like, hopefully as the episodes progress, she gets more comfortable with the character and we can see it a little bit better. But so far, it's the one of the, like the one character of like those main ones, those main three that I have not been impressed with yet. She wasn't cruel. In the episode, I feel like they almost make her out to be cruel and arrogant. I had this plan and I knew it would work and I didn't need to tell you. And I just watched. I didn't help you. In the book, she's not there watching with her invisibility cap on.
Yeah, she was running.
Gone. She's gone with Luke to get the flag. And she was on her way back to try and help him and got there as he kind of finished the job on his own. And then she even says that in the book. She's like, I was on my way here as quickly as I could to help you, but it looks like you didn't really need my help. Like, how did you even do that? And she's like in awe. And it's like, how did you do that? And same thing with like the toilet scene where she's just like, what just happened? Not like in the TV show where she's like, you don't even understand what's happening, do you? Like, it's just, it bothered me so much. Like,
yeah. And it's not only her acting, like even the way that they wrote the lines.
And I feel like it's not entirely her fault.
They changed her character. It's not entirely her fault. Like the scene where they're walking with the capture the flag game and Percy trips and she just stands there and stares at him.
I'm like, Annabeth in the book would have laughed.
Yeah, done something. Laughed and then been like, here, let me help you.
And then like helped him up. Uh-huh. But she would have laughed and helped. Like, it's just they changed her character and that bothers me. Like, and it's not entirely her fault.
When she finds out that he's a son of Poseidon, she's not like, yeah, she's like, crap, Poseidon, are you freaking kidding me? This sucks.
She's like, now they're never gonna give us a quest. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. So I just, that whole scene really kind of just like culminated a bunch of things that bothered me. Annabeth's character, some key foreshadowing for later on with eliminating the hellhound and how he kind of discovers his strength in the water and the healing and everything. Was it still entertaining? Yes. Was it still nice to see him kind of like come to his own with the sword and kind of figure it out? Yes. But I feel like if they had done it closer to what was in the book, the impact would have been a lot stronger. That's where I'll end my number two. Bless you.
Thank you. All righty. What was my number two? Hold on. What even was it? I can't remember what I landed on. My number two. Oh, yeah. Okay. Here we go. And this is hard because this is the very end of episode two. Kind of breaching into episode three. So I'm going to try to be careful about what I say here. Because I know that they do more of the quest stuff in episode three, but I just want to talk about the introduction of the quest and the air surrounding the quest and all of it, all of that.
Yeah.
So let me find the
book open. Look at your references. Open the book.
Because from the beginning with this one, you know, they do the capture the flag game. He gets claimed by Poseidon. And then a few days pass. It's not like right away they're like, oh, you're the son of Poseidon. Get in here. We have a quest for you. It's like, no, he goes to Poseidon's cabin. A few days pass. And Annabeth,
he's miserable because now nobody will do anything with him because
he's the son of Poseidon. They're like,
oh, no, you're a big three. I can't sword fight you.
Yes. And he does one-on-one lessons with Luke during that time. And
I'm going to talk about that.
Anyways, so. And Annabeth is like, mad at him a little bit because she's like, again, she's like, now I'm never going to get the quest. Gosh darn it. Like, I was hoping. And Grover also wants him to get a quest because he's on thin ice with the Cloven Council and is like, I need to do a quest. And then he's like, oh, you're a big three. You're never going on a quest. I'm screwed as well. So both of them are like upset. And Percy's just doesn't know what's going on. He's just sad. And then,
sad angsty boy.
And then Percy gets pulled in. And they're like, okay. And Mr. D is like, I'm going to turn you into a dolphin because that's a better fate than what Chiron wants you to do.
First he threatens to just incinerate him spot.
Just incinerate him on the spot.
And then he says, if you're still here, he's like going to leave, right? There's some emergency meeting.
There's an emergency meeting. Yeah.
And he's like, if I come back and you're still here, I'm turning you into a bottlenose dolphin.
Yes. Which is an Atlantic bottlenose. Yep. There you go. Mm-hmm. And then Dionysus is gone for the rest of the quest stuff. So Mr. D is not there making some grand speech or, you know, convincing him to go. He thinks it's stupid because, and side note here, I love the actor that plays Mr. D.
Yeah,
but I feel like they changed his character.
I think it was good, but this kind of stems into some honorable mention stuff. I felt like the actor could have done the role.
Right.
Again, it came down to
limited
how it was written. And it's like, why did you not include the scene of him waving his hand and wine showing up just for the lightning to strike and him go, oh, sorry, force of habit. And then like change it to Diet Coke. Like that actor, like that kind of scene, like that kind of gimmick. He would have nailed that. He would have blown it out of the park. It would have been hilarious. Like,
and then, like, one of the notes I have is that sometimes the acting comes across a little flat. And one of the scenes that really made me feel that way was when they're giving the quest and Mr. D is like, there are forces outside of your control, blah, 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 blah. And he's going, I was like, yeah, that sounds so just rehearsed and awkward and not
it's good. Not Mr. D. Mr. D's not going to care. He's not going to explain that to you.
He's like, great, let's have a war. Because then I get to get out of this freaking camp.
I get to get out of here. Yeah.
I don't want to hang out with these people anymore.
Being the camp director with a bunch of kids.
Which they didn't even really explain why Mr. D's there. Like that it's a punishment or anything like that. I digress. So back to the quest. So Mr. D isn't supposed to be there. And then and then Chiron's like, hey, we think there's a quest for you. We don't know for sure because you have to go to the Oracle to have it confirmed. But we think this quest is for you. And Grover's like, oh, yeah, it's definitely for him. Like, he's had dreams, man.
Yeah.
And Percy's like, okay, sure, I'll go talk to the Oracle. Like, he's like, very open to it.
He's like, can you not tell me anything more about the quest? And they're like, yeah. No, not until you go talk to the Oracle, because Worf Rachel say no if you know more. Like,
they also explain how dangerous the lightning bolt is, that it's not just like, it's Zeus's master bolt. It's like, no, it could be copied and totally obliterate everything. It's like a really big deal.
They're afraid of war. They do mention that in the show.
Yes.
They just don't expound on the epicness of potential war.
And then this is the thing that I thought was just like, oh, I think it would have been such a cool scene in the book. I mean, in the movie. Or the show. In the show.
Too many things.
They talk about how it never rains at Camp Half-Blood. How the rain always goes around the camp. So they have outdoor
pavilions. It only rains there when they want it to.
When they want it to. Like if they need to water the strawberries or whatever. And right as they're talking about the quest. And then they talk about imagine the world in chaos. Nature at war with itself. Olympians forced to choose sides. Blah, 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 like carnage, millions dead. It would be bad. And you, Percy Jackson, would be the first to feel Zeus's wrath. It started to rain. Like, just so epic. Because it's like, oh, it never rains. And then it's raining. And they're talking about, I just think it could have been such a cool scene. And really, like, had an emotional oomph.
Again, though, it's showing, not telling. And having trust and faith in your audience to catch on to those kinds of things. And so they do. They omit a lot of that kind of, like, symbolism from the show. Yeah. And that is something that I was a little annoyed with, going again into some honorable mentions, I guess, that I felt like there was so much telling.
Yeah, it was very expository at times.
And you need to do some, don't get me wrong. I understand. Yeah. You cannot assume that everybody watching the show has read the books. You can't.
Or knows Greek mythology super well.
Yeah, there needs to be some explanation, but I felt like certain things could have been shown a little bit more. It's like, this is a visual medium.
But. And obviously in the book, there's some exposition, but it's done through Percy's thoughts because it is first person. So it's hard. Again, we have talked about this at length in other episodes. It's so hard converting a first person narrative book to a visual medium.
But speaking of honorable mentions, that's something that I did like that they did, is that they started the show with that inner monologue, with that Percy Jackson.
The beginning was great.
Hey, if you think you're a half-blood like me too, like, I would turn away, like, I would stop. Yeah. Like,
They kept that, which was nice.
I thought that opening and that intro to kind of match that inner, I loved that. I thought that was great. I was kind of hoping that they'd start every episode that way.
Or have it just, like, intermittent throughout. I don't know.
And I can understand how maybe having it intermittent throughout would be maybe a little disorienting, right? You're in it and then you're supposed to be pulled out of it and then you have to go back in, right? But I thought it could have been cool to kind of start each episode with a little bit of, like, Percy's inner monologue, some lines straight out of the book kind of thing. Thought that would be really cool. They did, but they at least started it from the beginning, and I did like that. So
But to wrap up the quest thing, I'll probably touch on it a little bit next episode, just wrapping up the Oracle stuff. But without getting into that, I didn't like how Percy didn't want to go on the quest and that they had to kind of coerce him into it.
Yeah.
And that they made it seem like he, like, had to. And they were like, Poseidon called on you. He needs you to do this. And that's going to play into my number one point a little bit. But it's like, it just, the whole premise of it was different. And I don't know. It felt almost icky. I didn't like it.
Gave you the ick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that's not so fun. But good points. Felt similarly. That scene in general. Yeah. I was just like,
it just wasn't great.
Feel like they're trying too hard.
Other
honorable mentions. I mean, there's going to be a lot. So
here we go. Real quick off of that. Speaking of that scene, I feel like Mr. Bruner, he wasn't how I pictured him. Not visually even. Like, he felt more standoffish in the show. Less like a warm presence that you could turn to. And obviously with the Yancey stuff, they really cut that short because they wanted to get to camp, which I understand. But you miss how much Percy looked up to Mr. Bruner, how he, like, really enjoyed his class and really liked him as a teacher, and how Mr. Bruno expected so much of Percy and was like, I believe in you. You, like, can do great things.
Right.
And as much as Percy was like, oh, no, I can't. He also was grateful.
He was the first teacher to really
push him,
believe in him, or push him.
And it's the only finals, like, test that he studied for because he wanted Mr. Bruner to know that he tried. And, like, you totally miss all of that in the show. And so the relationship just feels kind of stiff And so especially then in that scene where he's like, this is your quest, you have to do it. It's like, whoa, bro, like, I barely know you. Back off.
Yeah. I can understand why, like you said, they wanted to get to camp. They wanted to get to that part of the story. Don't focus a whole lot on, like, the antsy stuff. But yeah, I think character development and relationship building suffered a little bit because mm-hmm. of it. I'll get into that. Some more problems around that in my number one. But can I say one of my, like, kind of petty, stupid...
Yeah.
Like, honorable mentions is the Minotaur. Not a Minotaur.
Yeah, I was like, maybe that's how they describe it in the book.
It was just a bull.
Well, it had a dog's head.
No, it had a bull's head, but it wasn't a well-constructed...
It looked like a dog's head.
...bull's head. No, in the book, it describes it very clearly as a man wearing tighty-whities, and then at about his belly button, he starts getting really hairy, and the further up you go, the more and more hair it becomes until it's a bull's head and everything. It's... In the show, it was just a straight up bull charging and running around.
Yes. Can I also?
And I'm like, the Minotaur is not a bull. It's a half man, half bull. That's the whole point of it being a not just a bull and being a Minotaur instead.
But he's wearing whitey tighties. No.
But he wasn't even.
He was
wearing underwear, but they were not like bright white, like the whitey tighties, like that stark contrast that wasn't.
Well, here's really the problem. There. And this is something that I have a problem with the editors. Holy crap, this show is so dark.
So dark.
You can't see anything. That scene was
impossible to see.
I had to turn off every light and watch it at night to be able to even somewhat see it. And I know that this is a problem in future episodes because I've watched them. And so I'm just going to get it out of my system now and not talk about it in future ones. But holy crap, turn up the brightness, guys. Like, I should be able to watch this during the daytime and not miss everything.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's on the editors. I had to
rewatch the episode at a different time in a different room at different, like, yeah, because I was like, I couldn't.
You can't see
freaking
anything.
See what was happening for like the first the time whole I watched it. I couldn't even see the Minotaur,
so I was like, I don't know what he looks like.
Yeah, but that was a kind of dumb thing that I was like, that's not what a Minotaur looks like. That's just a big bull.
That's just a bull.
I also felt like Thalia's tree was
looked
not
so sad. It was not so like sad. This
giant pine tree standing landmark.
They describe it as a White House Christmas tree pine.
Like, yeah, and I'm like, no, that just looks like a sad tree on the top of a hill. Like,
I'm sure she is. That's sad. That's a landmark. Her tree doesn't need to be sad.
Yeah. Thought she was supposed to be valiant and honored.
His introduction to camp with him, or not even that. I've seen some people commenting online that it's crazy that Percy loses his mom and then is like immediately like up walking around camp doing all this stuff, which I think the show does move it through very quickly. And
they gloss over just how long he was in recovery.
Yes.
And they also completely take out the ambrosia and nectar.
Yeah, because the ambrosia and nectar seem to like help with his grief. It's like a magical fix for a little bit. Also, the scene in the book, and maybe they thought it would be too sad to show this, but after he fights the Minotaur, Grover's supposed to be knocked out during this also. But he is carrying Grover into camp, crying for his mom. As he walks into camp. Just so sad. And very realistic of a 12-year-old who just watched their mom die.
Yeah, but you know what I do love that they added? Was his own little, like, private, once he learns about the burnt offerings.
Oh, yeah, that was
he
cute.
He does, like, the little private, and he burns, like, the blue food.
And talks to his mom, and it's like...
They did it, like, his own thing.
I know you... normally hate my calls, but this isn't that kind of call. Loving
that was
it
still
here.
Really sweet. I liked how they did that. So
that was I like crossed out one of my notes because I was like, I feel like we're missing that, and then that scene came and I was like, never mind.
Yeah. So I thought that was cute.
The other thing, can we just talk about Sally Jackson for a second?
I love her.
I love her. And maybe it's because we're both moms.
And I love that they had her like sitting out in the rain.
Yeah.
Like, be close to Poseidon.
Like feel the water and be close. Mm-hmm. And then her like level-headedness, but you could tell that she was just putting on a strong front for her son, who she would do anything also, for.
I felt like the relationship in the show between her and Gabe was a lot more realistic of like, yeah, she's not just a total pushover.
She's a New Yorker too.
She, you know, like barters and like holds her ground a little. Like, I think movie Sally Jackson, like really.
She was just a sad, broken woman and it was very depressing.
And it's like, it was nice to see Sally portrayed the way that I envisioned her. As like a strong mom who will do whatever it takes to protect her son. And she's not some pushover. Like, yeah, she's with Gabe partially to help mask the scent, right? From monsters and everything. But that doesn't mean she just has to like take whatever he throws at her, right? Like she holds her ground a little bit. She, you know, argues back.
So far, Gabe doesn't seem bad enough to kill at the end. So I'm curious how that's going to play out. Because maybe they just won't.
I forgot that they don't kill him. Don't they just turn him to stone?
How is that not killing someone?
Listen, it's nicer in my brain than like decapitating somebody. Okay.
Sure. So I'm wondering if they're just going to cut that too, because I feel like they haven't made Gabe scummy enough to justify that.
I mean, definitely annoying.
Yeah.
Definitely not who I'd want to come home to. But he's, just kind of
they made him like a dumb comedy bit where he's like, I got in a fight. And he's like, all right, nice.
He's like, okay, well, if you're going to live under my house and my rules, like.
Okay, that's what you think because you're a child. Yeah. Like, yeah, he sucks, but. I mean, I don't want to murder him.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there. He was more likable than I think usual.
Yeah.
Is there anything else honorable mention wise super big you want to talk about? Because we still have to talk about our number ones and fan faux pas, and we're almost at an hour.
I know. I have just. One more tiny thing from the first episode. Their car doesn't get hit by lightning, which I think is kind of cool because it's like symbolic of Zeus being like, nope. Mm-hmm. So I think that just having the car crash was, you know, not as cool. And then the one big last one I want to talk about. There's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Info comes from a lot of different people than it does in the book. Like the same info is being conveyed to Percy, but in the book,
from different people.
Grover, but in the show, it's Luke, or it's Luke in the book, and then it's Chiron, or it's Annabeth, and then it's Luke, or like
it was supposed kind of, to be Chiron, but then in the show, it's his mom. Like,
yeah, they really kind of shuffled that around, which I guess at the end of the day,
doesn't matter a whole lot,
doesn't matter a ton, but. A lot of his interactions with Annabeth in the beginning are cut.
Yeah.
So you don't have any.
It's weird. I don't know why they did it that way.
There's no foundation of a relationship between the two of them prior to Capture the Flag.
Why would he choose her to go on a quest? Based on the TV show, what they've shown makes zero sense why he would choose her. Zero.
So I know that they like kind of try to justify it in the show, but yeah. So that was my other thing. It was just like, as I was reading and then watching, because I sat on my couch, I would read a chapter, watch that part of the show, pause the show, read a chapter, back and forth. So I was very, you know, nitpicky.
I tried to give the show more of a benefit of the doubt by watching the episode, then reading. then to where the episode ends, then watching the next episode, and then reading until I got to the end of that. So I had the episode first, not the book first, because I've known.
I watched the episodes in their entirety first before I read the book at all.
Okay. Because I'm just like, I just know that if the book is fresh in my brain,
yes,
I can be real brutal to the film adaptation.
And so I just noticed, I was like, oh, you're talking to that person. Okay, sure. But the information's getting across.
Yeah.
It's just different.
I say the only other thing that I don't know if it bugged anybody else. What was with the weird nymph dryad?
Oh, the Grover. It's like they're trying to give Grover more substance, I guess.
Fine by me. It was weird. That's not how dryads are described as looking or being at all. They come out of a tree. They don't. Look they are like not a tree. They're, yeah, it was weird. And it wasn't great makeup.
It was interesting done. Choice. Yeah.
What was the point? The budget you put towards that for a completely pointless, stupid role, let's be real, was not necessary at all. I honestly, I'm so confused why they included it. Don't get it at all. Waste of screen time, waste of budget on makeup and stuff you didn't need. Could have put that towards the better CGI and hellhounds or something. That was something I was just like, what? He could have just gone straight into the Cloven Council. You didn't need to have any sort of weird interaction with some dryad.
He didn't need to go to the Cloven Council. That's not in the book.
Well, but also he just like walks up to them and then they still don't show any communication.
Yeah, they cut
like,
it no anyways.
No conversation. They cut it anyway. Like it's just so weird. So anyway, that's my last honorable mention I will mention. So
yeah, we could go on and on and on. But like you said, we need
we gotta
to
keep going.
Not be 2 hours long.
So, number one. My number one stems around Luke. As we have said, this is not a spoiler-free podcast, and so my number one's going to involve quite a few spoilers. So I'm just going to get them out of the way right now. We all know, those of us who have read the books, that Luke is the betrayer. He's the one who Percy calls friend, who betrays him in the end, okay? But not only does he betray Percy, he betrays Annabeth because he and Annabeth are super close. It's going to take a lot more than you just briefly telling me a story about how you came into the camp with Annabeth for me to see that there's some sort of relationship there. I see nothing. And the episodes with Luke are basically done. There's no buildup. Where's the one-on-one lessons between Luke and Percy where Luke is training Percy? And the reason Percy's good with a sword at all is partially because that's where his natural talent is. The show took the time to show him failing at archery and failing at metalworking and failing at, you know, these different things, but then didn't take the time to show when he did finally find the thing that he was somewhat good at, which was he's good with a sword.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of relationship building and bonding with Luke happens during like a classroom kind of like full group experience where Luke is training like all of Cabin 11 on sword fighting, but also on a bunch of one-on-one training that Luke has. And they have a bunch of conversations and Luke answers a bunch of questions for him. And he feels like he can ask Luke the questions that he's hesitant to ask anybody else. But then there's also scenes in the book between Annabeth and Luke where you can see so strongly this admiration and just love basically from Annabeth for Luke. And I get nothing in the TV show. How is this final impact? How is this final betrayal? This, it's like the whole pivotal thing. It's like the final thing that happens in the book that then continues the story, right? That feeds into the next where it's like, how is that going to have any sort of impact? Not to mention that I didn't get the like charm and like, ah, oh, yes, I'm the son of Hermes. Like, I'm charming, I'm goofy, but I'm welcoming and kind of everybody likes me. Like, I really didn't get that from Luke at all in the first place anyway. Even without them really trying to form a relationship, he's not charming.
No, and that he
also came across as just sad.
I mean, he's sad, but
he's supposed to hide it better.
Try to show Percy bonding with Luke through their mutual hatred of the gods, and that kind of goes into my number one a little bit. But I just was like, yeah, they like tried to make that connection, which was not a connection that us as the audience really were like gung-ho about.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, yeah, I agree with Percy that the way the gods operate are stupid. But yeah, that's like the whole point of the Greek gods and the stories about the Greek gods is that like they're flawed the way mortals are. And you can learn lessons.
Also, it's something that doesn't get resolved until the end of the series for those of us who have read all five books. So, like, they're kind of heavy hitting it in this first season. And I'm like, it's not getting resolved for a while. Are you going to be this heavy hitting in every season? Like, tone it back a little bit. One issue at a time.
Yep. So that's basically my number one is... for a character, for a quote unquote side character that actually has a pretty big impact on the overall plot and the overall story, to kind of be overlooked and not really given the development that I feel like is necessary. I guess you could just say I'm really curious to know how these final episodes, the final episodes of the show will turn out.
Yeah. And it's very interesting because they went to the trouble of including Chris Rodriguez in those first couple episodes with Luke. And like, that's kind of a fun little Easter egg slash like foreshadowing because, you know, he comes important way in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they thought about that, but not about how important Luke's development was to that foreshadowing. Mm. Like that was an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my number one. Let's move on to yours.
So my number one has to do with character motivations, and that kind of goes off of this. So, for instance, they have that whole scene where Luke is talking to Percy and they talk about Kleos and like glory. That is not in the books at all. Like that's and Luke's like, yeah, everyone respects me because I have glory. And it's like, no, people like Luke. He's a likable guy. They respect him because he's nice.
And because he's been there a while.
Yeah.
And he's not only one of the older campers because he's like 19. He's also been there for 5 years. That's a pretty long time. He's very skilled with a sword. And he's also a son of Hermes who is charming and friendly.
Welcoming.
And everybody likes him.
Yeah. So they changed that and then they had this whole glory thing be so important. And it just irked me how Percy, who is supposed to be like Mr. Loyalty, Mr. Nice, just genuine guy, in my opinion, is suddenly so obsessed with like, I need to get glory so my dad will notice me. And I need to go on this quest to, you know, prove him wrong. And I need to, like, it's so, like, centered around proving that he's, like, better or, and he's just so mad at his dad the whole time.
Sorry. And, like, don't get me wrong. The book, in the book, Percy does make a couple comments of, like, well, that doesn't seem very fair. And like, he makes comments, but he's not bitter.
But he and has in the these show, memories. He's almost bitter. He has these warm memories associated with his dad that he like can't fully make peace with because his mom's like, you didn't meet him as a baby. Like he never saw you. And he's like, no, I have this like warm recollection of my dad seeing me as a baby, like this warmth. And so he feels conflicted, a very like confusing relationship with his father. But it's not just he sucks, I hate him, I don't want anything to do with him, I need to get glory. Oh, he wants me to go on this
quest? You can't make me.
Then I'm not going to go. Yeah, like.
Until Grover comes in and changes the motivation.
And it's like, hey, maybe you can save your mom. And that's where they want you to go to the underworld too. So why don't you just do it? And Percy's like, fine, okay, I'll go. But I'm just going for my mom. Like, I just didn't like it. I didn't like the change of motivations that they gave to characters. Like, even Grover,
Grover, the show doesn't even mention like a seeker's license or anything.
I think they did at one point, but it's not as emphasized for sure. And so it's just kind of confusing. Like, why does Grover want him to go so bad? And like, I don't know. The thing that bugged me the most was the Percy thing. Because I love Percy as a character. He is one of my all-time favorite fictional characters. And so I was like, you're doing my boy dirty. I don't like it.
Yeah.
So I'll stop there because I could go on and on and on and on and on. But we still have to do our faux pas, and I know we have quite a few of those. So,
yes. How do we want to split these out?
Are they all on Instagram comments?
I don't know. I'm checking Facebook just to make sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't see any on Facebook. So.
Okay.
I think they all must be on Insta. The Instas.
Are they all comments or are some of them messages? Yes, one of them is a message.
Okay, do you want to start with that one?
Let me just make sure that's the only message. Yes, because that was our Narnia one. Okay, so we have one from We Ship It Podcast. Probably Devin, because he generally does their social media.
He's usually the one that does their social media, so we're going to assume it's Devin.
So he said, episode 1 and 2 thoughts. First off, I love it. The detail they put into bringing the text to life is stunning. The development of some characters is amazing. Sally Jackson, for starters. For others, not so much. Yeah, I'm talking to you, Gay Bugliano. I thought they underplayed Mrs. Dodds way too much, but I understand the need to keep the pace moving. They're on a time crunch with the episodes. I also feel like Annabeth is underplayed in these earlier episodes. Currently, I'm a bit behind in recent episodes, but these are just some of my first thoughts. We didn't even touch on Mrs. Dodds. We didn't even touch on that scene.
I mean, we did a little bit. We mentioned that it was rushed. The Yancey stuff was kind of rushed through.
But that... But
yeah, they altered... That scene in its entirety on the show happens out by the fountain, whereas in the book, he, like, follows her inside and...
Yeah, but there's like not a bunch of people around.
Time lapses, and yeah, it's not with a bunch of people around. The mist isn't that strong.
I feel like the show puts way more emphasis on the mist and the strength of the mist and all about the mist from the get-go. And I thought that was interesting. So, thank you, Devin. We agree.
Yes. Okay, and then we can just rapid fire back and forth on these rest of these comments.
Jeez, yeah.
We love it. So, yeah, keep it coming, guys. Oh, yes.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we love the interaction. So, Sunshine on a Stormy Day on Instagram said, I could scream for days about this series, but we'll keep it short. Love the slow reveal of Mrs. Dodds to Electo. Grover and Percy switching sandwich toppings was the cutest thing ever. Uncle Rick's cameo could go on and on. Yeah, we didn't mention that either. I'm really happy with the series, and I appreciate the work and thought that was put into consider... how we adapt this to the screen, but keep the integrity of the characters and plot. Also, the camp looks so stinking cool. Like, oh my gosh. I mean, we focused on a lot of the negatives, but you did point out a lot of positives. The camp was done beautifully, like looks of camp, pretty spot on to how I'd pictured it in my head.
My only complaint with the camp was I thought the cabins could have been a bit more diverse.
A little bit more eclectic, yeah.
Yeah. But otherwise, perfect. I would go there.
Definitely.
We have one from Jessica, J.A. Phillips, 1991, on Instagram. She says, literally none, it is perfect. So, sorry. We,
sorry we ripped it apart.
Yes, but we had some other thoughts.
Still super enjoyable. And
oh, I love it.
On the things that really, really count, like plot points, for the most part, again, yeah, they hit those. They didn't miss any super vital plot points. Just some of the things we're nitpicky about.
Yeah. And I have watched those first few episodes like 3 or 4 times now already. So I do enjoy it. I'll definitely be rewatching it many times in the future.
Yeah. We got our girl Allie, Dumb Girl 01. Next on it, she said, so far it's awesome. Huge improvement from the movies. Yeah. But anything could be better than the movie.
Yeah.
My mind is kind of all over the place, so I don't even know where to begin. Granted, any of these changes I don't think were bad. Like, he was expelled early from school because Grover lied in order to protect him. But in the books, he stayed longer and was just told he wouldn't be invited back. We still got a lot of big things the movie skipped, like his mom taking him to their beachside cabin. I love that we got to see more of the cabins and actually see Percy have to be in the Hermes cabin. The explosion in the bathroom, how he was used as a ploy and capture the flag. My only complaint is I want longer episodes. I want more.
You and me both, yep. Sister.
Yeah.
For way too short.
Yeah.
We have one from Sam Berry, SKB Reads on Instagram. She said, I like it. The cast, the vibes, the writing, the costumes, all impeccable. I'm not really bothered by the plot changes because we're still getting the same story beats and character development, just told slightly differently. And I'm really liking that they're incorporating more foreshadowing of stuff that happens in later books. That is definitely true. You can tell that they're going into this thinking long term, which I appreciate the optimism that they think they're getting a long term series. I hope so.
I hope we get a season for each book, right? Yeah.
And the one thing we didn't touch on, which I normally do, the costumes were amazing. Costume department, A+.
The leather armor and the shirts and they got it all the way down to the details of both Luke and Annabeth are wearing their leather
the five necklaces beads.
With the five beads. Yep. Yeah. So
it was a great mix of the Greek with the modern and summer camp vibes. I thought they did a great job with it.
Oh, we've got another one here from Sierra Rails 18. The faux pas my friends and I noticed with this series so far are minimal. For example, Gabe isn't as atrocious or smelly as he could be, but he's still unlikable. Also, they moved the Fates to a later episode. Besides that, the show has been amazing. I've been impressed at how well each episode follows the book. The casting is amazing. I had the unfortunate luck of seeing the Percy Jackson movie before I read the book. Ooh. I didn't realize how poorly that colored my mental image of the book until the TV show cast a way better Sally than the movie. Movie Sally was too dead inside. I'm much more attached to movie Sally. I think she meant to say TV show Sally.
TV show Sally.
And her awesomeness definitely reflects the books.
Yes, I would protect TV show Sally. She is amazing.
I think it's insane that you watched the movie before reading the book, but I doubt you're the first. I doubt you're the only one.
Yeah.
So
it's crazy.
Okay. We've got one more.
One
Yay,
more.
Yay, fan faux pas.
This one is from Anna Vandernoll. We learned how to say your name now. I love the series. The casting is done perfectly, and I agree with Dumb Girl, Allie. I want longer episodes and more. I'm so annoyed when I reach the end of an episode because there isn't more. Totally agree, because it's just, again, I'm like mad at Disney. They should have had more faith in it.
It's like, come on. So that's why, despite some frustrations, I still overall really like it. I want it to do well because I want them to keep making it. Like, I don't want them to say, it didn't perform as well as we thought it would, so no more. Like, I want them to keep going. And I'm hoping, like with a lot of other franchises, the budget increases with each season. Or
I think I read somewhere that the first episode was one of the most streamed releases on Disney Plus.
Good.
So that's a good sign.
Yeah, hopefully, again, hopefully it just keeps up that way.
But overall, I did really enjoy the first two episodes. I thought that they were really good, you know, for what they were given and for how short they ended up needing to be.
Mm-hmm.
They crammed a lot in. 138 pages. That's a lot to cram into just two episodes, like an hour of content, really. But
that's what I'm saying. That's why I was a little frustrated, because I'm like, it's a TV show, not a movie. You're supposed to be able to fit more into a TV show than a movie.
And I'll definitely,
why did you have two episodes cover so much? But it's,
I'll have higher expectations of later episodes, because I'm like, clearly you wanted to spend your time on this, which makes sense. Yeah. It's the juicier parts of the actual quest. So I'm hoping that in our future episodes going over things, we won't have quite as many nitpicky little details, because they won't have to skip as much.
Yeah.
But I am reserving any judgment, because we'll see how it goes.
The next episode we do will cover basically the rest of chapter 9 through chapter 13. So it is fewer chapters, still two episodes. So yeah, hopefully it's more concrete. Yes.
Yeah, that's
not concrete, but yeah, detailed.
That's way less.
I'm not sure how to answer the age-old question, because we haven't finished the book yet.
I think we need to put it on pause.
But I mean, I guess we could just say, so far, is the book better so far? Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Is the TV show still very entertaining? And are we still very excited about it? Yes. But the book is still better, like, at this point. So.
Yes.
And probably will remain so. Sorry.
It's such a good book. It's so hard.
It's so good. So.
It's one of my all-time favorite books. I'm very protective of it.
Reread it so many times. It's like a comfort book for me.
When I say I'm a Percy Jackson kid, like, this book series changed me. I studied archaeology and classics in college because of the Percy Jackson series. I wanted to go study in Rome. I almost went to a college in Rome because of the Percy Jackson series. Like, it shaped me as a person.
Person, yeah. Very important, okay?
Yeah, so when I say I'm protective of this series, that's why. Like, it's so important to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hard on it because I love it.
Yep. And I mean, I've always been interested in Greek mythology. So when I started reading this series as a teenager, it just resonated with me for that. Not to the extent yours did, but I have always loved it. And like I said, I've reread them multiple times. And specifically The Lightning Thief, like the first one.
Yeah.
I've read probably twice as much as the rest of the series, because I'll just take that one with me and read it when I'm traveling and read it on trips. And we will continue next week. No minisode. We don't want doing this TV series to just take forever. So changing things up a little bit, and we're omitting minisodes a little bit while we do this. So next week is episodes 3 and 4 of the show. And then, like I said, it's essentially, I don't think it stops halfway through one this time. I think
it's a hard stop. End
of chapter 13. So yeah. In preparation for the next episode, page 211, if you're curious, read through the end of chapter 13 or page 211, watch episodes 3 and 4.
Oh, wait. No, it is halfway through again.
No, it's not.
Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't end with him falling. It ends after he talks.
Okay, it's literally like through page 1 of chapter 14. It's essentially end of 13.
It's 200, page 215. That's where it ends.
Did it at the end of the episode? I have to rewatch it, I guess. But I didn't think there was really any interaction with the River Naiad yet.
I thought there was.
Okay.
We'll double check.
Okay, fine.
We'll post on Instagram the exact
read ones. A few pages into. I think, again, it's you're pretty safe to just get through chapter 13 and you got it mostly covered. You got the bases covered.
Yeah.
We'll post specifically on Instagram more concrete, like, hey, this is what it's covering. This is what we want FanFauxPaws for next kind of thing. So that's next week.
Thank you again for all the faux pas. This is the best response we've ever had. It was very fun.
Yeah, we love it. We're glad everybody else is just as excited as we are to talk about it and get into it. Nerd life, nerd unite.
Percy Jackson kids unite.
Any other announcements or anything before we sign off for today?
No, definitely. Yeah, just at TBWD Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. That's where we'll be posting for the next set of fan faux pas. That's where we'll be giving updates. That's where we'll be asking for cues for our Q&A minisode coming at the end of this month. So go check us out there.
Yep. But we appreciate you all for listening and tuning in and nerding out with us. And we hope that you all have a great week.
And don't forget to read.